Are teams losing leverage to trade their players before they even get an opportunity to do so? Let's talk about it. Welcome on into First Pitch, your daily MLB recap, covering everything you need to know for Major League Baseball. I'm Christian Rowell. You can find me on Twitter at @FirstPitch_MLB. Joined by Lindsey Crosby. You can find him on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. And Lindsey, got a fun episode for you today. We got players that are deciding to not go in certain trades. We have some free agent signings to talk about, some that are some interesting moves. And then we have some possibility of some trades of some former Cy Young movement as well. So lots to talk about on this show today. And while you're here, please click subscribe, hit like while you're at it, help that algorithm flow, get to all the baseball fans in the world, and then leave a comment below. Join the conversation here on First Pitch because we would love to have you join. We would love to talk more baseball because that's what we do every single day of the week on this show. Let's start off with probably one of the most interesting storylines so far this week. And what was kind of a dull free agent week in comparison, but that's kind of how it always feels the week after the winter meetings, right? We had this huge surge of news in the winter meetings. Then we get to this week. It's almost this lame duck-ish, if you will. But there was a possibility of a trade being in place for Nolan Arenado to head to the Houston Astros. Nolan Arenado says no. He has a no trade clause, currently has six teams on that list. Houston's not on that list. He decided not to add Houston to that one. And as of the moment, he's sticking with St. Louis. What's your overall thoughts on that before we dig into it?
It's weird from a ballpark fit, right? Like Nolan Arenado is a guy that the bat has started to slip. I want to say he's like, 34 years old right now. The bat started to slip a little bit. But if there's any ballpark that would maximize his production, it would be Daikon Park, I think is what they're calling it now, with the Crawford boxes, right? He's a heavy pull guy. As a righty hitter, similar to Isak Paredes, nobody's as pull heavy as Paredes, but he's in that same ballpark. And so getting him in that same ballpark would maximize the slipping offensive profile. And I think the word was he claimed he didn't necessarily want to move this early in the offseason. Part of me wonders, was this a response to the Astros just trading away Kyle Tucker, right? Like Arenado's been on a losing Cardinals team the last few years. Does he think the Astros are going to be losing for the next couple of years after getting rid of Kyle Tucker? And he didn't want to be stuck in that for the end of his career.
Yeah. And where was he right before St. Louis, right? He was with Colorado. So he hasn't been on that World Series contender type team his entire career. So yes, you would instantly think if you have lived under a rock for the last 12 months, that you would think that Houston should be a premier spot to land someone when you're thinking about World Series contenders. But after their subpar exit in the playoffs, after their interesting start to the season, they had to regain all of that momentum back just to get to the postseason. And then the trade of Kyle Tucker, which we should say, which put on record that comeback in the second half was mostly without Kyle Tucker. Yeah. But trading away a guy like Kyle Tucker does, you know, put up certain flags to say that, hey, maybe we are taking a step back in 2025. If you're a guy like Nolan Arenado, who only has a few good years left, and if you'd have to even possibly say that some of his best years are behind him. I don't know if he's ever going to get a silver slugger again. You have to wonder if Houston is the right spot for him or if he's trying to go to a different spot. Currently, right now, the six teams that are on his no trade list, the Philadelphia Phillies, the New York Mets, the Los Angeles Dodgers, San Diego Padres, and the Los Angeles Angels, and I'm missing one. I don't have it up top of my head, but they're
Yankees. You say Yankees?
It's not the Yankees. It's the Mets were the one. I should have had that prepared. But that is
Red Sox, Padres, Angels, Dodgers, Mets, Sox. Phillies, Padres, Red Sox. Yeah.
Yeah. The most surprising one that would not be a championship contender is the Angels, at least right now. But it's a hometown team. We saw Braves, Travis d'Arnaud do the same exact thing. But overall, to me, I think this all stems into the portion of they made this statement out like completely loud saying they were willing to move Nolan Arenado. John Mozeliak made that. He's in this weird moment where he's in this lame duck period in his general management where he's going to be leaving the program, leaving the organization after 2025. I see the same thing happening with the Philadelphia Phillies with Alec Bohm. They put all their offers out on the table, say, we're willing to move this guy. Where is the leverage? Before they even get the opportunity to move him, where is the leverage? Especially a guy like Nolan Arenado, who's on the second half, the downside of his career, Lindsay.
Downside of his career, and you've already kind of acknowledged that you're not competing. And so everybody, like, I would argue the Phillies at least have the advantage of Alec Bohm's not making a ton of money. And they can always go to him and they can say, hey, like, we're sorry. You know, we think we're going to, like, we had these ideas. We were worried about the free agent market, et cetera, et cetera. You don't have an option on Nolan Arenado. Like, and he, his list, these are the six teams that I am willing to play for, kind of puts you into a box, right? Because now your leverage is so low, you obviously see he wasn't kidding about that six teams. There was a report that he hasn't given a formal list to the Cardinals, but that they're aware. I don't care about the semantics. The point is, that's where he wants to go. He's willing to move to first base if he needs to, which San Diego is going to make him do that because they have Manny Machado. It's just, it's an odd situation to me. Houston, again, it's a great fit for Houston's ballpark. I see why Houston went after him. I see why Nolan said no. You let a cornerstone guy like Bregman walk. You trade Kyle Tucker at the same time. Like, I get it. I get why he didn't want to go. I just don't know really where you go from here unless you're going to get less now, right? Like, when another team reaches out to try to make a deal, they're not going to offer as much as the Astros were going to because they don't even know if Arenado's going to take it or not. And just the Cardinals have very little leverage left in this whole situation.
Yeah, if you're any of those six teams and you have the just the smallest idea of maybe wanting to get Nolan Arenado, you trade them pennies. You move them low-level prospects and probably say you're not going to take on that much money to move a guy like Arenado. Because I'm going to sit here right now on December 20th and say that no matter the situation, whatever happens, if they gets traded to one of these six teams or not, Lindsay, Nolan Arenado cannot be a St. Louis Cardinal and opening day in 2025. Based off this entire scenario, how everything has already gone through, you can't have him back as your leader of the organization to begin the next season. You just can't.
If nothing else, I mean, yes, there's the whole saving face thing with, like, trying to get rid of him. But if nothing else, this Cardinals team is a couple of years away from being legitimate World Series contenders again if all of the prospects pan out, and he's not going to be there for that. You would keep him on the roster for the next couple seasons, and then by the time you're back in a competitive window, he's gone. So even if you hadn't have shot yourself in the foot with the public comments on it, there's no reason to keep him. And I was talking at the trade deadline, you should think about moving Goldschmidt and moving Arenado, and they kept them both. And now Goldschmidt's walking for nothing. He got no qualifying offer. He'll walk for nothing. I feel like you could have given up something here. This, to me, this still feels like the best situation is the Yankees. Do a situation kind of like when you got Cody Bellinger. You're giving a minimal prospect. You're getting some money from the Cardinals, right? But you're picking up some of the money, a lot of the money yourself. And that gives you another amazing infield defender to back up all of these ground ball pitchers that you've brought in, like a Max Fried, like a Jonathan Lyzica. You've doubled down on Marcus Stroman now by trading Nestor Cortez. I still feel like the Yankees are the best locate or the best destination. And I still think it ends up a deal kind of like when they got Bellinger. They give up a marginal prospect. They take some of the money and the Cardinals are stuck with the rest. And it's probably going to be a worse deal than the $45 million that Houston was going to take of the 70 something million left on the contract.
Yeah, I think I also agree with you. I think the Yankees would be a really good spot, but that's not one of the teams on his six right now. Will he add? Will the Yankees be one of those teams on the case instead of Houston? Because the Yankees are obviously a World Series contender right now with the, even though they lost Juan Soto, the other pieces they've added. Yeah. We had that conversation, you and Troy did just the other day, about what situation is better. Is it without Juan Soto or with the pieces that they have moving forward? Let's move on from Arenado, because I do think it's something that we're going to be talking about throughout the weeks on this show, because he's obviously going to be moved. We are going to see Nolan Arenado in a different jersey in 2025. I am 101% sure of that one. I don't think we're going to see him back with St. Louis, barring something absolutely crazy. And as you said, the save face, I just can't see that happening. I mentioned a minute in the Phillies where they're not holding any leverage. The Phillies kind of are doing the same thing with Alec Bohm at third base. He's not being moved. There's some small conversations about him possibly being traded, but Dave Dombrowski has done the exact same thing on that style where he is potentially trying to move him. And some of these trades have not worked out. Dombrowski and the Phillies took a different step forward today and signed Max Kepler to a deal. Does this move the needle at all for Philadelphia? Does this help them go in the right direction?
So, spoiler alert, like, I liked Max Kepler for the Braves. It's a one-year, $10 million deal. I feel like he had knee injuries last year. He did not play well at all. But in his career, he's above average defensively. He's one of those well-rounded offensive guys. I don't think he's going to hit 36 home runs again like 2019. That was a juice ball year. But if you can get – I mean, Castellanos hasn't actually been that good, right? Like outside of whenever something significant happens and Castellanos hits a home run that day, like outside of that, a celebrity death happens and Castellanos goes nuts. Outside of that, he hasn't been that good. And if you can swap Castellanos and Kepler, and you'll improve the defense – and I feel like the floor offensively is probably the same or better with Kepler. I don't think this moves the needle on a team that has Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner, but I do think this raises the floor. And you saw in the second half of the season when Harper was scuffling, when Trey Turner was scuffling, when Schwarber was scuffling, the rest of the roster wasn't able to pick this team up. I think Kepler can help in those situations. But he's not going to win you a World Series, and that's still the big issue for Philly is they can't seem to get over that hump.
According to Fangraphs right now, they did put out a new roster when Kepler was signed. They have Castellanos still in left, and they put Kepler in right, and then Brandon Marsh playing center. Rojas moved to the bench. In your opinion, Kepler is a left-hander, and then both Rojas and Castellanos are righties. If the roster stayed put as of right now, could you see a potential platoon situation either with Kepler and Castellanos and Kepler and Rojas?
I play Kepler every day. I think Castellanos would be a situation. He's in left. You can minimize the impact of the glove, obviously. And the ideal scenario here is probably Brandon Marsh plays because of the offense in center. And then you defensively swap in for Castellanos with Marsh and you put Rojas in center field defensively late in games. Kepler hasn't played a lot of center. This is just something where, like, Kepler is much better against righties. Like, career line, he's like 243 against righties, 221 against lefties. The slug's almost 100 points higher. I could maybe see something where you would platoon, but I still think if you platoon anybody, it's going to be Marsh and Rojas, right? Rojas hitting righty. The bat is still a little iffy. And so you would play Kepler every day is the goal. And platoon Marsh and Rojas. So I don't know, Salino, if it moves the needle. I do think, like, and I don't think you platoon him. I do think you use him as an everyday guy, barring some sort of injury. If they could move the $40 million from Castellanos, that'd be ideal. 2 years, $40 million, and then you could add a legitimate outfield guy to the mix. Maybe you go and you give up a pick to get a Santander or a Teoscar Hernandez or something, but I feel like this is the best you could do right now. It is a guy who, yes, he's better against righties, but I don't think you have to platoon him against lefties. You just know you're not going to get the power.
Heading into Christmas right now, we see Juan Soto to the Mets. We know that the Braves are surely going to get better in 2025 with all their players coming back from injuries. And then obviously the Philadelphia Phillies led the division last year. What needs to be done? What pieces right now? If you're Dave Dombrowski and you're not making senile trades like he has over the last 2 weeks, what are your next moves as the Phillies GM to ensure that you win the division again in 2025?
I think the big thing for the Phillies is the back end of the bullpen. Like the Phillies have not been able to really to figure out the back end of that bullpen. When these guys are hitting, like when Bryce Harper's hot, when Kyle Schwarber's hot, when JT Realmuto's not feeling the effects of his age and they're going to cut back his workload this year. This offense is good enough. This rotation is absolutely good enough. But even with some of the moves that Philly's made, I just don't think you have enough in the back end of your bullpen to hold leads unless your offense is going to be prepared to make a comeback at any given moment. And I as much as I'd love to see, they've got like four lefties back there. They don't have to go get Tanner Scott, but there are a ton of great relievers. This relief market has barely been touched. You have a couple older veteran guys. Kirby Yates, I think, would slot right into this bullpen as your closer. Yes, you brought in Jordan Romano. The Blue Jays let him walk for a reason. He was their closer, and they let him walk for a reason. Bring in a proven commodity in the back end of the bullpen and count on this offense to keep mashing. Count on this rotation to continue being filthy and just make sure that if you hand these guys a lead in the seventh or eighth inning, you don't lose it. That's all you got to do. And I think that's the most obvious avenue. And instead, we see all these weird trade offers for Dombrowski, these dumb trade offers. He did try to trade for Mason Miller. He did try to get a closer. I feel like the most obvious solution here is just go get a back end dude. Go get one of these veterans to be a closer for a year or two, like a Kirby Yates, and let's go. Let's hop into the season. Let's go.
I still think that the NL East is going to be the best division in baseball. I think that it's only got better. There's no doubt about that in my mind. Let's stick with the National League East. We got plenty more to talk about here, but if you're still listening and if you're still here, please do us a favor, click that subscribe button just below us right here and leave a comment too. Maybe even that thumbs up, that likes button, check that out for us. If you're still listening and you haven't done that already, it really helps us out here at First Pitch. The Washington Nationals, Lindsay, look at them. They're finally in the news, but in a possibly head scratching way. They signed Mike Soroka to a one-year deal for $9 million. Soroka is going to be 27, entering his sixth season in the league. Last season, if you looked at his stats, and if you're only just a stat guy and don't watch baseball and don't watch the rest, you'd wonder why this is happening. He went 0-10 last year with a 4.74 ERA for the White Sox, the worst team in Major League Baseball. Then went to the bullpen, showed a little bit of success with a 2.75 ERA. Still $9 million. They're going to test him out as a starter where he was 0-10. You think this is a good idea for the Nationals? And why do you think they're going with him?
Yeah, he really struggled in his nine starts, 0-5, 6.39 ERA. I don't think the White Sox won a single one of those games, which is wild to me, right? But when he got in the pen, he looked really good before he went down for a little bit with injury in, like, I think mid-July. And when he came back in September, Soroka threw seven and a third innings out of the pen, 13 strikeouts, two walks, two hits allowed, no runs. I think that, like, you see relievers all the time get $9 million. I think $9 million in this pitching market for Michael Soroka it's surprising if you look at what he did as a starter. But if you think about figured something out down the stretch in the pen, and worst case scenario, we have an expiring deal for a guy who was a really good reliever down the stretch last year, you're in a situation where there's no downside here, right? If he works out as a starter, great. You can re-sign him or he can go to free agency and get a big contract. If he doesn't work as a starter, kind of like A.J. Puck didn't work for the Marlins as a starter last year, what'd they do? They put him back in the bullpen. His numbers turned around, and they flipped him at the deadline. That's exactly what I see with Soroka. If he's owed $9 million on the season, well, guess what? If you trade him at the end of July, 2 months left in the season, that's down to $2.5 million, which is nothing for a contender to take on at the deadline. So this is a great signing for me. I love this for Soroka. He gets $9 million. I love this for the Nationals because they weren't going to hit the luxury tax anyway. So who cares what the contract was? The upside's immense. And you now have innings of proof that if he can't figure it out as a starter, he'll be pretty good in the pen and you can flip him at the deadline. It's no downside here for me.
in the projected starting rotation for the Nationals this year, he's going to be the second righty on the board, joining Jake Irvin. But you got a whole bunch of lefties still with Mackenzie Gore, DJ Hers, and Mitchell Parker. You're still waiting on guys like Cade Cavalli, who is recovering from Tommy John. He should be back in 2025. And you got Josiah Gray, who also is recovering, but I think he's going to be out for the entire season of 2025.
Yeah, he had that in like late July. I think it's an internal brace, so 12 months could be August of 25. I wouldn't count on Josiah Gray to pitch meaningful innings all year, especially with I'm thinking he's a 26 guy, honestly. But worst case scenario, maybe you break Josiah Gray in a little bit in the pen late in the year in Soroka's own spot.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. When I'm looking at the Nationals here, though, it's hard for me, as somebody who said this on this show before, to wonder why you're going to sign $9 million for a guy like Michael Soroka when you let Trevor Williams walk. And I know I've been a huge Trevor Williams guy. I'm telling you, he's still available, and I cannot believe that he still is. I know he had an injury all season long, but when he came back, he was still really good. He was one of the best pitchers in baseball before his injury. Whoever gets this guy is going to be in for like one of the best pitchers in the back of their rotation in 2025. I'm sticking to it. Maybe there's still a sign for Washington to come back, but maybe he goes to a contender. I don't know. But to me, immediately when I saw the Nationals sign Mike Soroka, and for the money, I was like, why is that not Trevor Williams? I had to say that. That's just something a rant that I had to put on this show, Lindsay.
That's your guy. That's your guy. No complaints there. That's your guy. Go with it, buddy.
All right, let's wrap up this show with some interesting trade rumors coming around in the MLB.
Wait. Sorry. Fun fact, Michael Soroka is now the highest paid Washington National for 2025. There are exactly two players with guaranteed salaries. Kiebert Ruiz is in the middle of that, what looks like a really awkward extension now. Michael Soroka is the highest paid Washington National. That's probably part of it too, is the payroll right now with Soroka's only $86 million. They've got to spend more money. I think that's part of it, just to hit like the minimum spending amounts that you're supposed to have to not have the Players Association put agreements on you. So that's probably part of it too.
There's a lot of first basemen on the market, Washington, and you need one. Sign a Christian Walker, sign a Pete Alonso, do it. Use the money. You have what it takes to make that happen. All right, moving on. The Minnesota Twins are listening to offers for Pablo Lopez, one of the best pitchers in the game. Definitely some news that just popped up. I think this came around the news because the Jesus Luzardo deal was possibly ruled dead. We obviously heard some rumors about Dylan Cease possibly be on the move because the San Diego Padres are in a desperate need of some relief in their salary, which seems like an every year thing these days. But talking about the Minnesota Twins, let's get to them. Pablo Lopez, former Miami Marlin, got traded to the Twins just a few years ago, could also be on the move yet again. Who should be picking up the phone to get Pablo Lopez?
There's a lot of teams that should be picking up the phone to get Pablo Lopez. The thing on Pablo Lopez for me, 3 years, $21.75 million that covers ages 29, 30, and 31. Like, that's not bad at all for a dude who was a seventh place finisher in Cy Young as recently as 2023. And I know a lot of people will point to the 4.08 ERA in 2024. He started off really poorly. First half ERA for the Twins was 5.11. In the second half of the season, Pablo Lopez put up a 2.77 ERA. 81 in the third innings across 13 starts, 77 strikeouts to 18 walks. There should be a lot of teams picking up the phone for Pablo Lopez. It feels like this is a money thing. And as the free agent pitchers just are getting more and more and more expensive, this is looking like a much better deal than going out and giving up a draft pick to get Corbin Burns, or even look at the deals like Yusei Kikuchi went for just about this amount. Would you rather have Yusei Kikuchi in his, you know, up in the 30s already?
Is this, to me, the first team that comes to my mind, and let me know if you also think this as well, and you said multiple teams, so I'm sure this comes into it, but you brought up Corbin Burns, and he has not been picked up yet. But the Baltimore Orioles haven't done anything yet this offseason to address their starting pitching rotation in a division. Okay, they have some. You're right. They did do some.
Yeah.
You did some. I'm going to get to that in a minute.
Okay. Make sure.
But Pablo Lopez to the Orioles, with all the prospects that they have, To me, that makes like a lot of sense to me.
This, I think that's a great destination simply because Mike Elias has not shown the willingness to spend money that he has in the free agent market.
Even though Rubenstein is letting him do it.
That reportedly the new owner is like, yes, go spend this money. I want you to spend this money. And he won't do it. This is the kind of thing where the Twins, you can offer prospects to the Twins because the Twins are in a situation where they have these expensive deals. They have certain players on their team like Carlos Correa that are very expensive. Pablo Lopez is the second priciest player on that roster at $21 million. Like, Correa is at like $37 million. And then after that, you've got Byron Buxton at 15, Christian Vasquez at 10, who might also get traded. He's behind Ryan Jeffers in the pecking order at catcher. I mean, if Baltimore wouldn't have already signed a catcher, I'd say maybe they make a package deal for Vasquez. That's a lot of money for them to take on. But Pablo Lopez to the Orioles makes a ton of sense. And I'm kind of surprised they haven't already made that phone call.
Yeah, think about it. You got Eflin, Rodriguez, Kramer, Lopez, and then Sugano, who just picked up the guy that you were mentioning.
Sugano, yeah.
Yeah, Japanese free agent who is brilliant and going to be in his age 36 season when he makes his MLB debut. And there's not a one-year deal I don't like. Put that on a T-shirt. There's not a one-year deal I don't like. It gives the option for you to move Trevor Rogers either to start off in Norfolk or to put in the bullpen because you're still figuring out what's going on to him. And that gives you ample time to figure out what this rotation needs to do while waiting on guys like Kyle Bradish and Tyler Wells. And obviously Bradish being the big one in that situation. But Pablo Lopez, I mean, come on. If you have a top three right now to begin your opening day with Baltimore, with G-Rod, Lopez, and Eflin. I mean, that's a great way to start your season. And that continues to put you right back in the same situation where you were with New York battling for the top of the AL East.
You probably still have to supplement at the deadline, which I think is just kind of a fact of life now for most teams. But that gives you in a three-game series, that's probably the combination of pitchers that gives you a legit chance to take all three games. And like in a postseason series, I mean, there are worse groups of three pitchers than that. The Tigers had Tarik Skubal and just a bunch of spare parts, and they went farther than that. I'm not saying any of those guys are better than Skubal, but I would go to battle with that group of three guys, Grayrod, Pablo Lopez, and Zach Eflin, probably in that order actually. But that's a formidable rotation, and it gives you the depth and the insurance in case Sugano stumbles in his conversion to the States, in case Trevor Rogers can't be healthy or figure it out like you saw the struggles after the trade. To your point, he does have two options still. He can be sent down twice. And it saves you from having to call up some of the young arms that struggled last year, your Chase McDermott, your Cade Povich, because you don't really have a ton of high-level pitching prospects in the minors that you are ready to promote for starting spots. Like McDermott and Povich, maybe Brandon Young, and that's it. So you're looking at maybe seven starters to go into the year. Adding Pablo Lopez would go a long way to giving you insurance, giving you depth, and some injury protection. And that's just not a thing that the Orioles have really had in a while, because so much of this rebuild has been predicated on position players and not pitching prospects.
And they have the prospect capital to do so. One more thought on this one. How about this scenario? Right now, Corbin Burnes is projected to either go to San Francisco or Toronto. Those are the two teams that are the front runners right now. What about the loser in that situation? Could you see them maybe going after a guy like Lopez?
If I have the option of trading for Pablo Lopez, Dylan Cease, Luis Castillo, Jesus Luzardo, I think Pablo Lopez and Luis Castillo are the two most desirable of those guys because you get multiple years of control. Now, I don't know if Toronto has the prospect capital to go out and get one of these guys. I think they could be stuck on a one-year kind of thing for a guy like a Dylan Cease, and even then the cost is still pretty high. But especially if Burnes does end up going to Toronto, I think the Giants are going to have to swoop in and get somebody. And why not Pablo Lopez? I mean, they've gone out and they've gotten those veteran guys before, trading for Robbie Ray, trading for different guys. I do think they'd take Pablo Lopez in a heartbeat, and that ballpark would probably do him some good with those big dimensions too.
Excited to see what happens here. So we start off the show with someone declining a possible trade, and then we end the show with a whole bunch of rumors of a possible trade from another pitcher going to possibly the other league or possibly the AL East. Who knows? But we got plenty to talk about here. As you can tell, there is so much baseball here, and we are getting into the end of the year, into baseball, into 2025. We're going to have so much more. I mean, we're still months away from spring training, but we have plenty to talk about here on the show. And we're going to be with you every single day as we continue on. So be sure to hit that like and subscribe button down below. If you're listening in audio form, please rate us 5 stars wherever you're listening. It really does help the algorithm and push us out to more baseball fans. And that's exactly what we're here to do. Talk baseball. Join the conversation. Hit comment below. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.